The other factor is the war in Ukraine. Those on the wary side argue now is not the moment to drive another wedge between Eastern and Western Europe, and that unity is required above all in the face of Russian aggression. Those in favor, on the other hand, a collapse of democratic checks and balances that can lead to unhinged autocrat decided whether or when to trigger the mechanism. Knowing the human faces behind the suffering. Overnight Dias, an institution on falls, after days of heavy fighting and loss of life. Ukrainian officials of tanks rolled into the city, located on the Dnieper River near the Black Sea, according to its mayor. There is no Ukrainian army here, Igor Kolakov told the New York Times. The United Nations overwhelmingly backed a resolution that strongly deplored Russia's 93-strong body voted against the resolution. Russia, Belarus, Eritrea, North Korea, and Syria. A further 35 abstained, tensions before the invasion started last week. Kyiv, Ukraine's capital, remained 2 a.m. local time. Watch this footage from CBS News, which can't. Kharkiv, footage of devastated buildings revealed the scale of the battle that is ongoing for Ukraine's second city. Massive explosions struck two large buildings in Kharkiv, which is just 50 kilometers from the Russian building. Russia finally admits to casualties. Moscow has for the first time announced official casualty figures. 498 dead, with a further 1,597 injured. Note the old Soviet adage, to get a truer number, you'll need to multiply it by 10, and then add the official figure. This appeal. Today we stand side by side with all the Russians who do not want this unworthy war to be waged on their behalf. Courageously defend peace in this. Ukraine latest casualties, the UN has been able to verify at least 700 of them fatalities. But in a statement released Tuesday, the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights said it believes the casualties are considerably higher, SP 14, announced Marina Fanina, a member of its special monitoring mission, was killed by the shelling in Kharkiv. Playbook offers our deep condolences. International opprobrium, in New York, the United Nations overwhelmingly backed a resolution that strongly deplored Russia's invasion and called for the immediate withdrawal of troops. Just 5 members of the 193-strong body voted against the resolution. Russia, Belarus, Eritrea, North Korea, and Syria. A further 35 abstained, including China and India. A reminder for posterity of which side of history everyone was on when Russia invaded its neighbor in 2022. Beijing's role. The New York Times overnight reported that China asked Russia to delay its invasion of Ukraine until after the Beijing Olympics, citing a Western intelligence report. It indicates senior Chinese officials had some level of direct knowledge about Russia's war plans or intentions before the invasion started last week. They arrive in Brussels today for 2 days of talks, with Ukraine due to dominate. The previously scheduled meeting follows Sunday's emergency get-together to respond to the Russian invasion. It comes as the UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi revealed overnight that 1 million refugees from Ukraine had already fled to neighboring countries. That number is expected to swell as the situation in the country deteriorates. Extending protection, top of the agenda will be the Temporary Protection Directive. In the wake of the Balkan Wars. Previous calls by the European Parliament to invoke the measure during forward a proposal to activate the directive, which will be considered by ministers today. After his speech, Macron took to Twitter. First, he tweeted in Ukraine the face of honor, freedom and courage. Then, he switched to the Russian language with this appeal. Today we stand side by side with all the Russians who do not want this unworthy war to be waged on their behalf. Courageously defend peace in the spirit of responsibility, and declare this both in Russia and outside it. Opinion, drain Putin's brains, to hurt Putin, steal his top students. Argues Mikhail Kokorich is a Swiss entrepreneur of Russian origin and the CEO of Destinus, a Swiss aircraft company in this opinion piece for Politico. By attracting Russia's brightest minds, the West can undermine Russia's long-term ability to wage war, he said. Instead, it is expected that political agreement will be given. with officials then mandated to very quickly prepare the technicalities with sign-off possible in the next few days. While the directive can be activated with a qualified majority of countries, it is not clear if there is unanimous backing for the proposal. Some countries were previously lukewarm on the measure, but are expected to come on board now. Logistics. Several officials who spoke to Playbook from different EU countries explained the logistics behind the numbers. While many Ukrainians are arriving with biometric passports, others without documentation are awaiting verification from the Ukrainian embassies in EU member countries. One looming issue is accommodation. While the bulk of people in this first wave of arrivals are staying with contacts and families, some countries are preparing special facilities. Greece, for example, has already shelter or are waiting for their documentation to come through. While few arrivals are in need of such facilities so far, this could change as the crisis unfolds, officials say. Discrimination or disinformation. There have been widespread reports on. Poland has categorically denied this is happening, and several EU officials say privately that they believe some of the reports stem from deliberate disinformation from Russia. Exhibit A. EU Interior Ministers meet. EU Justice and Home Affairs Ministers arrive in Brussels today for 2 days of talks, with Ukraine due to dominate. The previously scheduled meeting follows Sunday's emergency get-together to respond to the Russian invasion. It comes as the UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi revealed overnight that 1 million refugees from Ukraine had already fled to neighboring countries. Extending protection, top of the agenda will be the Temporary Protection Directive, a 2001 tool introduced to give immediate protection to people fleeing conflict in the wake of the Balkan Wars. Previous calls by the European Parliament to invoke the measure during the 2015 crisis fell on deaf ears. But the Commission on Wednesday brought forward a proposal to activate the directive, which will be considered by ministers today. Details: the proposal will give immediate rights to Ukrainians to live and work in the European Union and to gain access to entitlements like housing and medical care. The new law will last for 1 year, but can be extended every 6 months. The proposal will also apply to non-Ukrainian nationals who have been living in the country and now need refuge. Next steps, officials stressed there will agreement will be given. With officials then mandated to very quickly prepare the technicalities with sign-off possible in the next few days. While the directive can be activated with a qualified majority of countries, it is not clear if there is unanimous backing for the proposal. Some countries were previously lukewarm on the measure, but are expected to come on board now. Logistics. Several officials who spoke to Playbook from different EU countries explained the logistics behind the numbers. While many Ukrainians are arriving with biometric passports, others without documentation issue is accommodation. While the bulk of people in this first wave of arrivals are staying with Greece, for example, has already opened up its Klaidi Center in the north of the country to house incoming Ukrainians who are in need of shelter or are waiting for their documentation to come through. While few arrivals are in need of such facilities so far, this could change as the crisis unfolds, officials say. Discrimination or disinformation. There have been widespread reports on social media and elsewhere that EU border officials are turning back non-white refugees. Poland has categorically denied this is happening, and several EU officials say privately that they believe some of the reports stem from deliberate disinformation from Russia. Exhibit A. Cash flow issues. Meanwhile, a group of 21 MEPs has written to European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde raising concerns about reports that Ukrainian refugees have been unable to convert money into local currencies in the EU. Politico's Victor Jack writes in to report. The issues arose after Ukraine's central bank temporarily restricted foreign exchange trades and stopped issuing cash in any currency apart from the Ukrainian hryvnia to stabilize the financial system after Russia invaded. The letter urges the ECB to help negotiate a currency swap agreement with Ukrainian officials and support banks from EU countries. Big issue. This is a major problem because many refugees withdrew Ukrainian hryvnia in cash before leaving. which they cannot use in the EU, Aline Matuta, the Renew MEP coordinating the letter, told Playbook. A common solution at the EU level from the ECB would be more efficient, as the refugees are now present in many countries and their number will increase every day. MEPs urge action, as EU interior ministers meet today. The parliament is calling for swift action to accommodate the Ukrainian refugees. SND chief Irache Garcia, who will visit the Hungarian border with Ukraine today, said it was urgent the Council unanimously triggers the temporary protection directive so that all EU governments can turn their words of solidarity into action. Ahead of today's discussion, Schengen, also on the agenda of today's JHA, is the ongoing discussion around revising Schengen, the EU's border-free zone. However, substantive talk of the revision of the Schengen border code has been pushed back due to the Ukraine crisis. Though ministers will discuss the issue, officials will be tasked with progressing work on the technical side. French Grand Plan. Playbook readers may remember that Emmanuel Macron announced plans at last month's gathering in Lille for a Schengen Council modeled on the Eurogroup, which would deal with migration issues at the EU level. The French presidency of the Council will update ministers on the margins of today's meeting, including plans to have a Schengen coordinator to sit in the Commission, such as financial sanctions and defense in recent days. Economic headwinds. Cracking down on crypto, EU finance ministers are increasingly concerned about Bitcoin and its ilk amid fears Russia could use cryptocurrencies to evade international sanctions. During an informal video call Wednesday, ministers agreed to crack down on crypto as they took stock of the economic fallout of the war. French economy and finance minister Bruno Le Maire told reporters, "We are taking measures, in particular on cryptocurrencies or crypto assets, which should not be used to circumvent the financial sanctions decided upon by the 27 EU countries." Scoop: further measures possible. The European Commission is exploring options to shelter its economy from the blowback of Western sanctions on Russia, including surging energy prices and potential retaliatory countermeasures from the Kremlin, five EU officials and diplomats told Politico. Details: the package, which could be adopted as early as next week ahead of an EU leaders' summit in Paris next Thursday and Friday, is still under discussion. Early talks, however, suggest its elements could include repurposing existing loans, fresh debt to raise money for loans in case of energy price spikes, and new guidance on fast-track approval of state subsidies, Politico's Palatama reports. State aid: in the short term, there is a set of measures on which we have worked with the European Commission, in particular with Commission Executive Vice President Marguerite Vestager, which can relate either to state aid or to special loans for companies, Francis Le Maire said Wednesday. They must target in priority the most fragile companies, the companies that are gas-intensive and the companies that are exposed to international competition. This is the framework that we are defining and that has been validated. Calls for help: in recent days, EU leaders have been calling for help in anticipation of economic backlash following the adoption of harsh financial sanctions on Russia. If you have a situation of sanctions and counter-sanctions, that will have an impact, Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo told reporters. Hence, at the European level, we strongly urge the European Commission to develop a package of measures to limit the economic impact. Prime Minister Mario Draghi of Italy, one of the countries that would be severely impacted if Putin turns off the gas taps, told senators on Tuesday that the war will have consequences on the price of energy, which we will have to face with new measures to support companies and families. It is appropriate that the European Union facilitates them, to avoid excessive repercussions on the recovery. The options: the package is a moving target. Commission services are hastily working on options and capitals haven't been formally consulted yet. However, officials and diplomats confirmed some of what's being discussed includes: MEPs urge action, as EU interior ministers meet today. The parliament is calling for swift action to accommodate the Ukrainian refugees. SND chief Irache Garcia, who will visit the Hungarian border with Ukraine today, said it was urgent the Council unanimously triggers the Temporary Protection Directive so that all EU governments can turn their words of solidarity into action. Schengen, also on the agenda of today's JHA, is the ongoing discussion around revising Schengen, the EU's border-free zone. However, substantive talk of the revision of the Schengen Border Code has been pushed back due to the Ukraine crisis. Though ministers will discuss the issue, officials will be tasked with progressing work on the technical side. Approval. French Grand Plan. Playbook readers may remember that Emmanuel Macron announced plans at last month's gathering in Lille for a Schengen Council modeled on the Eurogroup, which would deal with migration issues at the EU level. The French presidency of the Council will update ministers on the margins of today's meeting, including plans to have a Schengen coordinator to sit in the Commission. Economic headwinds. EU targets Belarus potash, as widely expected. The EU targeted Belarus with a new package of sanctions over its role in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The new sanctions crank up the pressure on Minsk's potash exports, a key source of income for the country, writing a previous loophole that meant Belarus potash exports were hardly scathed by the penalties. The package of sanctions will also target Belarus steel and wood sectors and build on the penalties already squeezing its oil, tobacco, banking and wider fertilizer sectors. Food chain ripples. Potash is a source of potassium, one of the three essential nutrients crucial for growing staple crop commodities like corn, soybeans or sugar. It is also used to produce wine, chocolate, canned food and fruit juices. Scoop. Further measures possible. The European Commission is exploring options to shelter its economy from the blowback of Western sanctions on Russia, including surging energy prices and potential retaliatory countermeasures from the Kremlin, five EU officials and diplomats told Politico. Details. The package, which could be adopted as early as next week ahead of an EU leaders' summit in Paris next Thursday and Friday, is still under discussion. Early talks, however, suggest its elements could include repurposing existing loans, fresh debt to raise money for loans in case of energy price spikes, and new guidance on fast-track approval of state subsidies, Politico's Palatama reports. State aid. In the short term, there is a set of measures on which we have worked with the European Commission, in particular with Commission Executive Vice President Marguerite Vestager, which can relate either to state aid or to special loans for companies, Francis Lemaire said Wednesday. They must target in priority the most fragile companies, the companies that are gas-intensive and the companies that are exposed to international competition. This is the framework that we are defining and that has been validated. Calls for help. In recent days, EU leaders have been calling for help in anticipation of economic backlash following the adoption of harsh financial sanctions on Russia. If you have a situation of sanctions and counter-sanctions, that will have an impact, Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo told reporters. Hence, at the European level, we strongly urge the European Commission to develop a package of measures to limit the economic impact. Prime Minister Mario Draghi of Italy, one of the countries that would be severely impacted if Putin turns off the gas taps, told senators on Tuesday that the war will have consequences on the price of energy, which we will have to face with new measures to support companies and families. It is appropriate that the European Union facilitates them, to avoid excessive repercussions on the recovery. The options. The package is a moving target. Commission services are hastily working on options and capitals haven't been formally consulted yet. However, officials and diplomats confirmed some of what's being discussed includes a new ad hoc temporary framework for state aid, much like the one adopted at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. This would detail the conditions under which capitals would be allowed to shore up their companies affected by the Ukraine crisis and ensure a fast-track approval from Brussels. Ongoing discussions focus on what would be the scope, the duration and the triggering event for such a new framework. A repurposing of unused recovery fund loans. EU countries that haven't used up their entitlement of loans under the bloc's Recovery and Resilience Facility could ask for more financing. No country except Italy has requested the full amount of loans. Any new financing request under the facility would need to come with a spending plan subject to Commission and Council approval. A third option would be for the EU to issue fresh debt to raise money that it would then lend to capitals at attractive rates, which could be used to counter a further spike in energy prices. The EU treaties allow for the bloc to provide financial assistance to its members under exceptional circumstances beyond its control, and in particular if severe difficulties arise in the supply of certain products, notably in the area of energy. Now read this, Politico's Jan Sienski writes that for the first time in years, Poland is getting some positive press, as a result of its response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Ahead of itself. Parliament in focus. EU targets Belarus potash, as widely expected. The EU targeted Belarus with a new package of sanctions over its role in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The new sanctions crank up the pressure on Minsk's potash exports, a key source of income for the country, writing a previous loophole that meant Belarus potash exports were hardly scathed by the penalties. The package of sanctions will also target Belarus steel and wood sectors and build on the penalties already squeezing its oil, tobacco, banking and wider fertilizer sectors. Food chain ripples. Potash is a source of potassium, one of the three essential nutrients crucial for growing staple crop commodities like corn, soybeans or sugar. It is also used to produce wine, chocolate, canned food and fruit juices. Running dry? But food industry experts were quick to quell fears of any major impacts on some of the EU's favorite foodstuffs. EU wine lobby SAEV said it expected negligent impact and Vinova, a company supplying the food industry with potash derivatives, also brushed off those fears. Looking west, as the world's leading supplier of potash and the owner of the largest known deposits, Canada's potash producers are poised to benefit from the Belarusian potash exit. Sanctions hurt. Meanwhile, Reuters reports that Russia's central bank has imposed a 30% commission on foreign currency purchases by individuals on currency exchanges, as ratings agencies Fitch and Moody's downgraded Russia by 6 notches to junk status. If you want to have transparency, this is not how to do it. Rule of law. Deep pockets. Digging into the numbers gives an interesting snapshot into the finances of the European Parliament's political groups, though the information does not cover 2021. The EPP group received by far the largest amount of money between 2018 and 2020, €3.6 million. The Party of European Socialists, PES, was close behind at €2.8 million, according to the report. In contrast, four parties, ALDE, the ECR, EGP and PEL, received between €800,000 and €1.4 million, while the smaller parties received around €300,000. Change afoot, the Commission last November published its own legislative reform proposals, which would require European parties to carry out due diligence measures in order to properly identify donors who give €3,000 or more and transmit this information to the IPF upon its request, in a bid to find out who exactly is funding political parties. Food for thought. Among the suggestions made by European Democracy Group to improve the transparency around funding of political parties are: the other factor is the war in Ukraine. Those on the wary side argue now is not the moment to drive another wedge between Eastern and Western Europe, and that unity is required above all in the face of Russian aggression. Those in favor, on the other hand, argue Russia's aggression has shown how important the rule of law is, and that not defending it leads to a collapse of democratic checks and balances that can lead to unhinged autocrats and ultimately to war. What's next? Officials suggested Brussels had not yet decided whether or when to trigger the mechanism. The association also says European political parties should expand their private funding streams, and connect in particular with small donors. European parties have no incentive to reach out to citizens for donations, says Drownow, who argues this exacerbates the disconnect between the European Parliament and citizens. We need to find a way of making small contributions matter more, he said. Agenda. Justice and Home Affairs Council, arrivals from 8 a.m. Watch. Parliament funding, a new report by European Democracy Consulting. Previewed by Playbook, calls for more transparency when it comes to how parties in the European Parliament are funded. Background: European political parties depend overwhelmingly on money from the EU budget. Between 2018 and 2020, public money accounted for a whopping 90% of income, according to available figures. Commissioners on tour: Ursula von der Leyen visits Romania and Slovakia, Thierry Breton starts 3-day trip to the Baltics in Vilnius, Lithuania, Margarita Shinas in Vienna, Austria, Virginia Sinkevicius in Kenya, Josep Borrell, Oliver Verhey and Janis Leinart-Sic and French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian visit Moldova. Energy Commissioner Kadri Simpson discusses with Parliament's Industry, Research and Energy Committee the energy-related aspects of the Russia-Ukraine crisis at 2:45 p.m. Transparency Call: European Democracy is calling on UF to be more transparent about revealing the information it receives publicly in open data form. It's an issue that has caught the attention of the European Ombudsman Emily O'Reilly, who in a decision last year found the information on the UP website was incomplete. Too late, there is also a further problem, says European Democracy's Louis Drownow. This information comes way too late to provide proper transparency. So donation contributions, pertaining to 2020 were published by the UP in late February 2022. If you want to have transparency, this is not how to do it. Deep pockets. Digging into the numbers gives an interesting snapshot into the finances of the European Parliament's political groups, though the information does not cover 2021. The EPP group received by far the largest amount of money between 2018 and 2020, 3.6 million euros. The Party of European Socialists, PES, was close behind at 2.8 million euros, according to the report. In contrast, four parties, ALDE, the ECR, EGP and PEL, received between 800,000 euros and 1.4 million euros, while the smaller parties received around 300,000 euros. M. A regular press briefing on COVID-19. Of reform proposals, which would require European parties to carry out due diligence measures in order to properly identify donors who give 3,000 euros or more and transmit this information to the UPF upon its request, in a bid to find out who exactly is funding political parties. Brussels Corner. Free rail travel, as reported in Wednesday's Playbook. Belgium's SNCB rail service is now offering free travel to Ukrainian refugees. While we mentioned that SNCF and Germany's Deutsche Bahn had implemented similar schemes, kudos to Poland, which was one of the first countries off the mark to offer free travel to Ukrainians fleeing the war. New jobs. The European University Institute's School of Transnational Governance in Florence has announced the appointment of four new professors: New America Chief Exec Anne-Marie Slaughter, Princeton University Professor Andrew Moravcik, former Spanish Minister of Foreign Affairs Arancha González-Lea and UK diplomat Robert Cooper. Instead, all donations over 500 euros should be made public. Congrats! Politico Alamanca Gurzu has joined Cypher Climate, a new publication by Breakthrough Energy. The association also says European political parties should expand their private funding streams, and connect in particular with small donors. European parties have no incentive to reach out to citizens for donations, says Drownow, who argues this exacerbates the disconnect between the European Parliament and citizens. We need to find a way of making small contributions matter more, he said. Agenda. Comma, Gabriella Galindo, Bjarker Smith-Meyer, Lily Bear and our producer Grace Stranger. Justice and Home Affairs Council, arrivals from 8 a.m. Watch. Prime Minister of Iceland Katrin Jakobsdóttir meets Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and Parliament President Roberta Metsola in Brussels. Commissioners on tour: Ursula von der Leyen visits Romania and Slovakia, Thierry Breton starts three-day trip to the Baltics in Vilnius, Lithuania, Margarita Shinas in Vienna, Austria, Virginia Sinkevicius in Kenya, Josep Borrell, Oliver Verhey and Janis Leinarsic and French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian visit Moldova. Energy Commissioner Kadri Simson discusses with Parliament's Industry, Research and Energy Committee the energy-related aspects of the Russia-Ukraine crisis at 2:45 p.m. Parliament's Libe delegation on trip to Latvia and Lithuania. Eurogroup President Pascal Donohoe visits Finland. 9th European Summit of Regions and Cities in Marseille, France. M. The regular press briefing on COVID-19. Brussels Corner. Free rail travel, as reported in Wednesday's Playbook. Belgium's SNCB rail service is now offering free travel to Ukrainian refugees. While we mentioned that SNCF and Germany's Deutsche Bahn had implemented similar schemes, kudos to Poland, which was one of the first countries off the mark to offer free travel to Ukrainians fleeing the war. New jobs. The European University Institute's School of Transnational Governance in Florence has announced the appointment of four new professors: New America Chief Exec Anne-Marie Slaughter, Princeton University Professor Andrew Moravchik, former Spanish Minister of Foreign Affairs Arancha González Laya and UK diplomat Robert Cooper. Congrats! Politico alum Anca Gurzu has joined Cypher Climate, a new publication by Breakthrough Energy. Birthdays: Xavier Bettel, PM of Luxembourg. MEPs Dominic Ruiz de Vesa, Isabel Garcia Munoz, Valdemar Tomasovski and Vilja Blinkevičiūtė. Ada Colau, Mayor of Barcelona, Salvatore Domenico Pogliese. Mayor of Catania, WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Bulgaria's Liberation Day. Thanks to Paola Tama, Gabriella Galindo, Bjarker Smith-Meyer, Lily Bear and our producer Grace Stranger. Subscribe to the Politico newsletter family: Brussels Playbook, London Playbook, Playbook Paris, EU Confidential, Sunday Crunch, EU Influence, London Influence, AI, Decoded, Digital Bridge, China Direct, Pandemic Passport, DC Playbook. All our Politico Pro Policy Morning Newsletters.